Welcome to the Well Woman Show, where we interview women executives, leaders, and entrepreneurs.
And you're listening to the Well Woman Show,
where motivated women achieve fulfillment and well-being.
You're listening to the Well Woman Show.
Take time for myself by coming to things like Well Woman Drinks.
To be accepting of myself no matter what. Step away from judgment as much as possible.
You're listening to the Well Women Show.
You're going to be in for a good ride. I don't regret anything. Everything I've ever done, I've learned from it, one way or another, good or bad.
Being a little bit selfish for yourself, you know, put your own oxygen mask on first and then give what's left.
I'm a woman. I would prefer to tell my own story. My story, though it's very personal, is universal.
You're listening to the Well Woman Show. And now your host, Giovanna Rossi.
Hi, Giovanna Rossi here, and welcome to another episode of The Well Woman Show, where I interview women leaders, executives, and entrepreneurs about their lives and their road to becoming and being who they are today. Do you ever find yourself overwhelmed with your responsibilities, and it seems like you'll never get it all done? Well, you're not alone. We all need to remember to use our superpowers, the ones we already have but don't use all the time, and take advice and wisdom from one another. Towards the end of the show, in a segment called Superpowers for Success, I ask my guest about her superpowers, and the answers will give you the strength, perspective, and power to keep on being the well woman you are. I'm so happy you're here, so thanks for tuning in. The Well Woman Show is sponsored by Better Money Decisions, headed by two awesome women, Kate and Lorraine, who put your interests first when it comes to your money. They make sure your plan and your investments are tailored just for you. No financial jargon, no Wall Street double talk. Go to bettermoneydecisions.com/wellwoman to get their new book for free. Today's topic is how to use spirituality to find hope in difficult times. And hopefully by the end of the show, you'll be inspired to value the dark times in your life as lessons to be learned. Recognize that the bad and the good go together, and that's okay. And learn to value the rebirth that comes with crisis. My guest today is Vera de Chalambert. Vera is a mindfulness facilitator, spiritual storyteller, and Harvard-educated scholar of comparative religion. Through deep contact, conscious inquiry, and holistic modalities, Vera works with her clients' energy consciousness system to invoke wholeness, restore balance, and invite deeper levels of integration and awareness to the client's energy field, body, and life. She's a graduate of the Barbara Brennan School of Healing and has studied non-dual healing with Jason Shulman at the Institute for Non-Dual Healing and Awakening. Vera works with clients and gives talks and presentations on spiritual topics and was a speaker at the Science and Non-Duality Conference and at Sister Giant in Washington, D.C. In this episode, Vera and I talk about the importance of letting yourself feel darkness and chaos, why strong feminine energy is significant in the current political climate, and how to use spirituality to find strength when times are dark. The free giveaway today is Vera's 5 Spiritual Life Hacks for an Awakened Soul. I love this giveaway because it gives you access to the power of spiritual connectedness, even if you don't consider yourself a spiritual person. Now to my interview with Vera. I'm speaking with Vera. Can you pronounce your name for me?
Sure. Vera de Chalambert.
I'm speaking with Vera de Chalambert this morning at Sister Giant 2017 in Washington, D.C. It's a super energetic, amazing space and experience. And welcome to the program, Vera.
Thank you so much. Thank you for having me.
Vera, I heard you speak yesterday and you lit up the room. I mean, it was really amazing, your energy, that you really filled the room and you were, I feel like everybody became you and you became everybody and everybody was there together. It was amazing. Can you share, why are you here? Just to share with the listeners a little bit of your message and what you were sharing yesterday.
Thank you for this opportunity. I wrote an article called Kali Takes America, I'm With Her. And really, by some kind of fluke, Marianne Williamson happened to read the article, and then she called me up and she said, Vera, come to Sister Giant. And I was like, who is this? She's like, this is Marianne Williamson, please come to Sister Giant. And so it was really it's really such an honor to be here. I feel very, you know, I can't believe that this is part of my reality at the moment still. So part of my work, so I'm a scholar of comparative religion, and I am a spiritual counselor. So I find myself working with people who are in the process of what I call the Kali dance. And that is usually times of dissipation, transfiguration, times when our stories about ourselves shatter and come to a close, and the certainties that we have shatter as well. And there's this time of the dark night of the soul that arises, which is a very difficult time and a very important time in our spiritual lives. Because although we all get into our spiritual lives as light junkies, yes, to improve ourselves, to get better somehow, to become more empowered, to become more serene, to become more something. What we really discover very often at a certain time in our spiritual process is that the spiritual life makes us into losers. What really happens is that we begin to lose our ideas of ourselves, our ideas of God, our old certainties, so many of our false beliefs, until we really get to the core of who we are. So, so it's a very important time. And so part of my message is that despite the fashion of our times, we shouldn't be so quick to split life into light and dark, good and bad, positive and negative. That the entire spectrum of our human life can be used for the purpose of awakening and healing. So that if we are in pain, if we are afraid, if we are angry, all of that is Shakti. And if we do not turn away from those difficult experiences, from those inconvenient feelings, we can use them too in our healing process. And that is really the energy of Kali. She is the fullness of reality, the fullness of life. She's light and dark. She is form and formlessness. She's so full. She's so primal. She's so infinite in all directions that our human mind can't comprehend it. And so she appears dark. But it's really the great mystery that envelops us when we come into contact with a quality of reality that includes life and death, birth, death, and resurrection.
And just for listeners' information, can you explain who Kali is?
Of course, So Kali is a form of the Dark Mother. There is an archetype of the Dark Mother. And in the Hindu tradition, we have the great goddess Kali. She's the goddess of life, of death, destruction, and liberation. But let's go beyond a particular religious tradition. In the Christian lineage, we have the Black Madonna. In the Tibetan tradition, we have Ekajati. She's the mother of the mothers of all Buddhas. And she's this great, dark, fierce goddess with one eye and one fang and one breast. And she stands on one foot, reminding us that reality is a single thing. She's braiding everything into wholeness. Anger and frustration and joy and bliss, all of it are parts of her fullness. In the Jewish tradition, there's the Shekhinah, and she is the divine feminine aspect of God, and she goes into exile with her children because she refuses to leave them. She stays among the broken, and she is that quality of God, which does not have a light of its own, which is like the moon, a reflective surface for the great lights of heaven. So what I want to say is, yes, Kali, but Kali is just a name that we can give the dark feminine from a particular perspective, and she's becoming so popular. I love that. But she's so much more than that, and there is a form of the dark feminine in every tradition. Mm-hmm. Now, in the Hindu myth, Kali appears at a time when there is this great battle for the world. The great gods and goddesses, Durga and Shiva, the divine masculine, the divine feminine, are fighting a battle with great demons of separation, of ego, of greed, of forgetting. And they're losing, they're beginning to lose the battle, because every time they wound a demon, from every drop of blood, 1,000 more demons arise. And they are realizing that they're about to lose the battle for the world. And then suddenly, from deep within Durga, a more fierce form of the feminine, Kali rises from her forehead, and she's ugly, and she's dark, and she's dirty, and she's angry, and she's hungry, and she has this great, great red tongue, and she's naked, and she begins to lick up all the blood, and she conquers the demons, and she saves the world. So when I saw the great goddess Kali projected onto the Empire State Building, first of all, I couldn't believe it was real, and it was. But secondly, I thought, isn't that the sign of the times? Here we are on the brink of our own extinction. I mean, we live in the times that the scientists call the sixth extinction. Every 20 minutes, a species dies out. Here we are suddenly with the election of Donald Trump, potentially on the brink of fascism. So we too are in this, if you wish, battle for the world. And I thought to myself, of course, it would have to be the great, dark, fierce mother that rises and that calls forth that energy within us so that we too might have a chance of saving the world. And what is that energy of Kali? What is that energy of the dark feminine? It's fierce love, unconditional integrity. When all else is stripped from us, when all of our privileges and all of our protections lie shattered before our feet, who are we really? What do we stand for? What do we sit for? And that is the place from which now we can rise as sacred activists and, God willing, save the world.
Okay, so there's so much there that I just want to dig into a couple of things. First of all, just for our listeners, the Empire State Building was an artist projected that.
The filmmakers of Racing Extinction, which is a documentary about the dying out of species, did this incredible project in the summer, last summer in 2016 in August, where they projected the species that are going extinct onto the Empire State Building. Among those images, among those videos, there were literally, you know, species crawling and running and swimming across the Empire State Building. They also projected the great goddess Kali onto the Empire State Building. And so, yes, she was among the images projected for that project.
And it was after you saw that you wrote the article.
I actually wrote a first article. I wrote my first Kali article, which was called Kali Takes New York.
That's right.
Right?
Before.
Exactly, before. And so that was my first kind of first public revelation of Kali. And that article weirdly went very viral because an Indian pop star shared it. And people assumed it was hers, and it just went all over the world. And until most newspapers then would had a little story about Kali, from India Times to Huffington Post, really everywhere. And then when Donald Trump won the election, you know, I don't know if you guys know, but there was a projection of, at first, the statistics, who's winning, you know, how many electoral votes. And then finally, when he won, there was a great picture of Donald Trump also on the Empire State Building. And when I saw that, I really had deja vu, you know, and in my bones, I thought, wow, Kali is truly here. Nothing will ever be the same. And that's the energy. It's not of great darkness or evil, or it's the energy of shock, of we no longer know anything. And if you haven't felt like you're drinking from the fire hose for these last, you know, months or so, I feel like we all have. Mm-hmm. And so that shock, that uncertainty, that sense of having been shaken and being unsettled is the energy of Kali as well. Ralph Waldo Emerson said, only to the degree that we're unsettled is there any hope for us. And so we are all indeed quite unsettled now, aren't we?
And have you been talking to people who may have either sat the election out or voted for Trump who are feeling that unsettled feeling?
I do not actually know. That's such a great question. I unfortunately am mostly in an echo chamber. So it would be wonderful to know. From what I hear, there are people on all sides of the political spectrum that are in fact feeling quite unsettled and unsure. It's in the air.
Well, it's so,
can't
it's,
help but
because
feel
it's
it.
About so much more than politics now.
It is so much.
It's
more.
About humanity. It's about
so much
people.
More.
It's about our lives, right?
Yeah.
And so, just taking a step back for a second, for women who may be really identifying with this idea of the dark path or the darkness, that you are this counselor for mm-hmm. women who mm-hmm. or people who are on that path, like on a personal level, how do women identify when they're in that?
How do they identify? Can you tell me a little bit?
Well, you were saying initially in your introduction that you help women.
Yeah, so first let me just mention that we have probably one certainty in life, and that's that there will be times when things fall apart. Yeah? That somehow, somewhere, our hearts will be broken. Everything that we hold most dear will perish, because that's just part of life, you know.
And so it's at that time when usually.
So very often, that's just when I notice most of my clients come to me. I didn't start out this way, but
yeah.
Most of my clients just are called to reach out during these periods where there's some stripping happening. Mm-hmm. There's something we're letting go of. There is this dissipation that unfolds, death, divorce, some form of despair or depression.
Health
issues. And sometimes there is no external reason why. Sometimes it's people who are quite advanced in their spiritual journey. They have done all the self-improvement work. They are, you know, they have been spiritual for a very long time. They've been deeply connected with the divine, and then they're suddenly enter the dark night of the soul. And we have a tendency to think that if that happens, something's wrong, mm. and we're maybe off our path, or we've missed some kind of, you know, a mark. But really, it is a sign of spiritual maturation. And usually, the dark night of the soul unfolds when we are quite far along our spiritual journey. Mm. And that's a time of kind of divine abandonment, where suddenly we no longer know what God is. We no longer know who we are. This kind of a great obscurity happens. And in the spiritual literature, we hear about the dark night of the soul, or the death before you die. And it's a real spiritual crisis that's essential for our spiritual healing and awakening process. And when we are in that process, we need people who can know that that is part of the spiritual journey, and who can stand with us in the fire without turning away, mm. with great faith in the process.
So it's a bit like what Marianne Williamson was talking about this weekend, that we have to not be in denial. We
exactly.
have to face the darkness.
There's no spiritual
understand
bypass.
It,
no spiritual bypass that can take you where you want to go.
Right.
You have to face it. You have to walk through it.
And face it. And then on the other side, there's the solutions.
And on the other side, well, maybe we can stop thinking about them as solutions, right? Maybe we can start thinking of it as being intimate with aliveness, being intimate with the entire spectrum of our human potential, and there's a great poem that I think really speaks to this process by E.E. Cummings, and he says, "And I said to my soul, be still and wait without hope, For hope would be hope for the wrong thing. And wait without love, for love would be love for the wrong thing. Yet there is still faith. But the faith and the hope and the love are all in the waiting, and the darkness shall be the light, and the stillness the dancing. And what that speaks to is that when we are in these periods of dissolution, of the dark night of the soul, we don't need to rush over them. Mm-hmm. We need to trust that there is medicine in that kind of darkness. I don't mean wallow in despair. I don't mean recycle the darkness. I mean be intimate, so intimate with life that we're willing to stand in the fires of transmutation. There is no resurrection without burial. There's no resurrection without crucifixion. And that is part of our sort of spiritual awakening process, how we are each crucified, right? There's no birthing without pain. I mean, I'm a mother. I have two children. Yeah, you know, all of us who've been through a birthing process, we know what happens in transition. And that is that if we have any chance of giving birth, there's a part of us that has to die. That where you've given up, you're like, I cannot give birth. You know, that there's this place in which it's like some part of you is dying in order for you to be able to birth. And that pain, I mean, we can numb ourselves out, but that pain is meant to guide us in the birthing process. Mm-hmm. And so both individually in the dark periods and at this moment in our country, collectively, we have to buckle down, we have to breathe, and we have to push. And we need to have midwives. We have to help each other to midwife the new self.
Yeah.
In these times.
And I just think that in order to do that collectively and really do that, it takes so much on a personal level mm-hmm. for each individual to really dig deep.
Yes.
Personally.
Yes.
And face whatever it is that they've been in denial of or that they need to deal with.
Exactly.
Because if we don't do that on a personal level, how can we do that on a collective, broader,
exactly.
bigger? How can we be who we need to be in the world if we don't take care of ourselves first?
And if we don't find such, you know, my teacher, Jason Shulman, who I've worked with for a long time, says, we don't wake up into some kind of perfect bliss or wonderful light. We wake up to our own delusions. We wake up to our own delusions. And letting go of those delusions is always a very painful process, isn't it? And that's partially what happened, right, with the election of Donald Trump. We were all like, what? Is this what America has become? You know, is this what... Well, and so many people who have not had the privilege have known that this is what America has been like for them in their experience for a long time. But we have somewhat woken up to some of our own delusions, right? And I think that gives me a lot of hope, that we're waking up out of our complacency, out of our numbness, out of our unwillingness to participate. And I mean the 2.9 million women who mm-hmm. took to the streets in the biggest protest in American history and possibly in the world's history, you know, here is another moment of archetypal rising, you know, of the divine feminine rising.
Yeah.
So.
And when we do face those things, it's often difficult, as you say, yes. but it's also eventually a huge relief.
Of course it is.
Because you're not burdened with all of that anymore.
Well, we have this great misconception that we want to be positive, or that we have to be positive, that if we are not positive somehow, because, you know, there was this great narrative of thoughts becoming things. So somehow what we made it into is, oh, I have to think positive thoughts and only feel positive things, because if I don't, then I will suddenly begin to create negativity in my life.
Right.
And that's a real misconception, because we don't create the negative things we feel or think. We create the unconscious. So if we cut off and split off and send into exile everything we don't want to be feeling, that becomes unconscious territory, and that's what we begin to create in our lives. So what I say is that we don't want to be positive. We want to get real. Because if we, you know, to feel the pain that we don't want to feel, if it's real, to feel the discomfort that we don't want to feel, if it's real, because that's going to guide us to what is real. Mm. I'm not saying the pain is real. I'm just saying that if it's there, it is guidance. And we want to be intimate with what life is bringing us. I mean, if I always say, if you're not heartbroken, you're not paying attention.
Yeah.
You know, and so perhaps out of today, our collective heartbreak today, something quite beautiful can arise. Something quite real can arise in our world. And I know that I sound a little doom and gloom. It's actually absolutely not doom and gloom. It's beautiful. It's intimate. It's alive, you know? And ultimately, what we want is to live full lives, whole lives, holy lives. And we can only do that if we widen our containers, if we have great courage to face life as it is. So...
Vera, you've talked a lot about what you bring in the world. Have you been involved in politics? I mean, this whole conference is about the intersection of spirituality and politics.
Yes.
And I find that so fascinating.
So fascinating. So I thank you for that question. And in full transparency, I have been in such a personal crisis these last 3 weeks, because I felt like, no, I'm not involved in politics. No, I'm not an activist. Not really. I write about activism, about sacred activism, and Andrew Harvey. And everyone, please, please, for the love of God, read everything Andrew Harvey has ever written, but most importantly, his work on sacred activism. He says, it's only when the passion of the mystic for love is united with the passion of the activist for justice, that the third fire is ignited. And from that fire, we might be able to transform our planet and our world. And so for me, this is what I'm sitting with right now. How can I be more involved in sacred activist work? So no, I'm a mother. I'm a single mother of two children. I sleep 3 hours a night. Meaning I haven't, like the rest of us, so many of us, you know, life goes on. There's so much to do, and I have not been politically involved. And so my question to myself at this moment is, what do I sit and stand for, and how can I be involved in what's unfolding here today, what's unfolding in our world today? Mm. And I'm called to certain things, but that's to unfold for me.
Yeah, that's your journey.
That's my journey.
And so, Vera, how did you get, when did this part of your life, the spirituality and all of this investigation and journey for you and sharing it with other people, when did that start for you, and how did that start?
Oh, well, you know, it's funny. I in my life, it never started. I mean, I remember being 4 or 5 years old, and I heard the word God, and it was like my entire body landed. I grew up in the former Soviet Union, and in a very secular Jewish family, where God was kindness and poetry and art and beauty, you know. Maybe there was a guest, I don't exactly remember in what context, but I remember hearing the word, and it was like coming home. Mm-hmm. And I had a pretty one-track mind from that time, 4 or 5 years old, and the only things that interested me were spirituality and God. And, you know, by 10 years old, I secretly had first communion in the Catholic Church, and I came home and my parents were like, what? And I knew it was very unkosher. And then I went and secretly had a baptism in Armenian Orthodox Church. Like, I was just sneaking away, trying to get as much God from every direction that I could. And then the world began to fall apart around me with the breakup of the Soviet Union. So in a way, I lived through a great shattering, or great world shattering. My family and I were fortunate to be political refugees right afterwards, and I came to America, and I began to realize that Jewish is also a religion, because in my world it was a nationality that you should hide, because mm-hmm. it wasn't very popular. And then my life continued to evolve.
How old were you when you came?
I was almost 12 years old. And I had a bat mitzvah, and I sort of delved into Judaism, and then I read every book every New Age book in the library by 13. Mm-hmm. And then I continued, and I did Buddhist practice, and I, you know, went into every temple I could possibly go into. I just felt like God is everywhere. I had such a longing, such a yearning for God, and I wanted it in any form, in all forms. And then that journey led me to work with different spiritual lineages, and to Harvard Divinity School, where I studied comparative religion and comparative mysticism, and then forth into healing work, and here I am today. But what started me on sort of my work with the dark feminine in the last few years was my own Kali dance, was the way in which the mother began to dance my life and strip me of everything I most loathed to give.
And was that a divorce?
Well, it was a series of strippings, actually. I was in a great car accident, and before I could recover, I had a holistic center in Paris. I lived in Paris for 10 years. I could no longer work with people because I was in so much shock. And then within months, my father passed away, and I had to move from France back to the States. So there was just constant upheaval and constant shaking. I was shattered. I felt to the bone by the time my father passed away. And before I could recover, my marriage fell apart. Mm-hmm. So it was all just these waves of being stripped to the bone until I was just hard to the ground. And it just felt like I had all of my defenses weren't functioning anymore. And something really profound began to happen for me. And that is becoming intimate with what I was most terrified of. Everything I wanted to save myself from, everything I set up my life to protect myself from, really got stripped from me. And I found that when I sat in that fire, instead of it being something terrible, it was the most enlivening, intimate time in my life, where I began to touch sort of the core of my own being. And I feel like everything I teach and everything I write and everything, the ways in which I work with people arise from that place for me. That when you come to me, or when I work with people, or when I speak, I'm not interested in you getting fixed. I'm just sitting with you in this fire. Mm. And I trust that the great intelligence that is your life force, that is your life, is going to burn you up and dance upon your ashes until you become the phoenix.
But you help people connect with that.
Yes.
Yeah, because exactly. They just don't know necessarily
exactly.
how to start. Or
that this
how to
is
do
just
it.
Part of the process, I guess, is what I'm trying to say, that this is not the end, and that on the other side of that is resurrection, and that Kali is the goddess of death and resurrection.
Mm.
Right? And so we have to have trust in that process of life. That life, that even in the darkest of nights, God is present and God is working on our souls in that darkness to have faith.
One of the top issues women tell me they struggle with is finances, which is why I want you to call my friends at Better Money Decisions. The company is owned by women, Lorraine L. and Kate Stalter, and they make sure your plan and your investments are tailored just for you. They're fiduciaries and put your interests first. No financial jargon, no Wall Street double talk. Also, they have a gift for Well Woman Show listeners, their free book, Don't Let Your Money Kick the Bucket Before You Do. And it's all about the need to manage your money for a long life expectancy. You can download the entire book at bettermoneydecisions.com/wellwoman. And you'll also get a free portfolio diagnostic so you can tell if your investments are right for you. Just go to bettermoneydecisions.com/wellwoman.
Vera, just to wrap up the interview and the show, on the Well Woman Show, we talk about superpowers for success. Mm-hmm. What does success in life mean for you?
What a great question. No one has asked me that. Wow, let me sit with that for a second. Oh, well, first of all, this conference, for example, has been by the most miraculous thing that has happened in my professional life. I would have never been able to even dream it up. It just was by sheer grace of Marianne Williamson and God. So on some level, I feel like, oh my God, you know, I have tasted a little bit of quote-unquote success. And when I connect to it at the moment, you know, the only thing that comes to me is we are each, in our own unique way, we're being deployed by God right now. These are truly mythic times. This, by many measures, might be called the late, late hour. And I think that the call from reality is very strong. And for those of us who really listen, we begin to feel into the whispers of how we might be deployed, each in our own way. And so I guess for me, success would be that I can fulfill my purpose at this time on our planet in my unique way, and to be able to listen so deeply to how God is calling to my soul, that I can show up and say, Hine ni, here I stand, God, use me, I'm willing, take me, use my life. And that would be success to me.
Mm. And Vera, can you share with listeners, what is your superpower?
My superpower? Well, I'm not sure if this is a superpower, but I would say heartbreak. You know, someone recently asked me, what's your message? And I said, my God, my message? I don't have a message. The only things I know of God are like heartbreak and longing. And so I feel like my superpower is being with what's here. Mm-hmm. And allowing my heart to break open. So I don't know if that's considered
that is a major superpower.
Power, but
because that's a hard thing to allow it to happen, right?
Yeah.
And do you identify as a feminist?
Of course, I identify as a feminist. How can we not identify as a feminist?
I don't know. Some people don't. So,
and Kali is like the original nasty woman. Okay, like no one is ever gonna grab Kali by the pussy. Let's just be very clear. All right. So, yes, I'm a feminist, and everyone should be man, woman, and old, young.
Yeah,
definitely.
That reminds me of President Obama's statement about being a feminist, which yes. I need to share that with.
Tell me, what does he say?
He said, I'm a feminist.
Oh, I love that. I didn't even hear that.
Yeah.
I heard Justin Trudeau say that.
Oh, nice.
The Canadian Prime Minister.
Yeah. Okay, so just wrapping up, what are you reading right now? What is on your nightstand?
Carolyn Baker is an amazing, amazing woman, is writing a lot with Andrew Harvey. She's this great world elder. I'm reading her Dark Gold, and everyone should. It's about our collective shadow and our individual shadow, and about working with our shadows so that we can be the instruments God needs us to be in these dark times.
Mm.
So Andrew Harvey, Carolyn Baker, Jason Shulman has an amazing book called The Instruction Manual for Receiving God. And
do you ever read anything that's not about spirituality?
Yes, I read things that are not about spirituality. I'm not reading anything that's not about spirituality at the moment, but I feel like I'm trying to think, what was the last thing I read that was not about spirituality? God, I can't even remember. I read the news. Not about spirituality.
Yeah.
I read a lot of poetry.
Okay, I was going to say, how do you relax? What do you do to disconnect? Well, yeah. I guess your whole thing is that you don't disconnect, but what do you do to relax?
Yeah, I read a lot of poetry. I read a lot of poetry. I do a lot of prayer.
Yeah.
I wake up early, and I feel like when I start my day with an hour where the world has not awakened yet, where my children are still sleeping peacefully, where it's just time for me to go into prayer, to contemplate, to meditate, it helps to unwire my system from everything that's happening in the world. That's one thing. And then my true medicine is dancing. Once a week, I go and I let it rip in conscious movement courses that are five rhythms and ecstatic dance. And without that, I feel like all of it gets stuck in my system. Mm-hmm. And contact improv, you know, ways in which I come together with my community, with like people who really can let it rip as well. And we dance it out. So for me, that is my medicine. I think that that is the world's medicine. I think we all need to be dancing. Alice, doesn't matter what her name is, but she says, hard time require furious dancing. And so may we all dance furiously.
Yes. I love it.
Yes,
I love
that's
it. That's a great way to end the show. Thank you so much, Vera, for being on the program.
Thank you so much for having me.
That's it for our show today. I've been speaking with Vera de Chalambert, who is a mindfulness facilitator, spiritual storyteller, and Harvard-educated scholar of comparative religion. Vera was a speaker at the Science and Non-Duality Conference in the U.S. and Europe and Sister Giant in Washington, D.C. In this episode, Vera and I talk about dark feminine energy and how it manifests, the importance of embracing the dark times in your life, and how to use spiritual connection to find your way through to new knowledge and sense of self. You can get the freebie this week at wellwomanlife.com/060show, and that is Vera's 5 spiritual life hacks for an awakened soul. Our monthly live event, Well Woman Drinks, brings women together to share our successes and challenges as women, leaders, moms, aunts, sisters, and all the other roles we carry. If you'd like to attend a Well Woman Drinks near you, or if there isn't one in your city yet and you'd like to start one, email me at info@wellwomanlife.com. If you enjoyed the show, please take a moment and subscribe in iTunes and leave a review. This helps raise visibility, which is super helpful when it comes to producing the show every week. You can also continue the conversation in the Well Woman Life community group at facebook.com/groups/wellwomanlifecommunity. For feedback, comments, or just to let me know you were listening today, find me on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at Well Woman Life. I'm Giovanna Rossi for The Well Woman Show. Until next time, have a super powerful week.